I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Bienvenidos, mi gente. Well, we're really excited today on Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. We have a wonderful guest, my hermano, somebody that I admire and respect very much. And we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is near and dear to a lot of people. And we're going to breach the subject of tequila, right? Mexico's national spirit. We're really excited, alongside my mom, Sara Martinez, of course, to invite Manny Hinojosa. Manny is the global ambassador for Tequila Cazadores, which is under the umbrella of Bacardi. And Manny and I are dear, dear friends. He's my compadre. He's someone that I care a lot about. And in the last 10 years, we have become very close. So to have him here to talk about tequila is an absolute treat for us. So bienvenido, Manny. Thank you for being part of the podcast.
Gracias, brother. Gracias. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure, Sarela. Thank you for the invite. I think it took a little bit too long, Aaron, to finally you, after 10 years, you can trust me and invite me to the show.
he's been telling me, Manny has to come, Manny has to come. Yeah. But you know, we were dealing a lot with Oaxaca at that time. We were dealing a lot with mezcal. So What is the main difference between mezcal and tequila?
Two different spirits. At the end of the day, we're talking about now they all have their own classification. But back in the day, they were all los mezcales de Mexico. You know, yeah. they were in one category, mezcales. Yeah. Tequila. We can argue, we can sit down and talk for hours about who is king, who is better, who was first, who was last, you know, all that. Tequila, 5 states of Mexico, produced with only 100% blue agave tequila. Most of the production of tequila comes from the state of Jalisco. About 95% of the production is all Jalisco. Mezcal, the production process is different. The agave is different agave. They don't use just one type of agave. They cook the agaves underground with rocks and wood, and they're smoky. So they're all beautiful agave spirits, los espíritus de México, las bebidas espirituosas de México. They deserve a beautiful respect, but it's what makes Mexico or México be on the top of the, everybody wants a taste of Mexico, everybody wants a taste of tequila, everybody wants a taste of mezcal, bacanora, sotol, pulque. Everybody in this point, I think, is the best time we ever have in so many years. And I think thanks to you, Sarela, and thanks to you, Aaron, and so many people, and the history that we have in the country, that Mexico or México is in the best position ever. Everybody wants to be Mexican. Everybody wants to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there was a time when my restaurant was very young that we were the largest consumer of tequila in the entire state.
A purchaser, Mom. Purchaser.
Purchaser.
Yeah, yeah. You bought more tequila than anybody in New York State. Yeah. So, Manny, can you talk to us a little bit, to all of our listeners, about how you got started into the business? Because I know that your dad was a diplomat in Mexico. You have roots. Obviously, you're from Mexico City, which we're not going to fault you for, but we can make fun of you. But you have roots in Veracruz, a través de tu jefe, to tu papá. So talk to us a little bit about your story.
Okay, so I was born in Mexico City, mom Spanish, dad from Veracruz, Mexico. Grew up in Mexico City. My dad was a lawyer. He was in the politics. and he wants me to be like him. And he really, I love my dad, and I love everything. He was my, he's still my hero. He's no longer around. But I went to law school because he was a lawyer. I wanted to kind of follow his footsteps. And I start working in the, House of Representatives in Mexico City, the Federal Congress. And I did it for like 3 years, and it was not my thing. After I really got to there, and it's like, no, I don't really want to do that. So I moved to Cancun. And I start working club, and I start having a good time. Finally, really good time.
You're still here.
And I'm talking 85, 86. Yeah. So a long time ago, Cancun was just maybe 10 years old. You know, Cancun was nothing. So it was just a few hotels, a few clubs, and the downtown was just developing, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I moved to Cancun. I did my part over there. One day I say, I got to go. I have to move on. Went back to Mexico City and finished a few things I had to do. I did, and I moved to San Francisco, and law degree, everything I have didn't count. And it's like, my thing was, let's go back to law. And it's like, no, 10 more years of school, not really. So I started working in a restaurant, and I started bussing tables. You know, the English was not the best. It's still not the best, but I started bussing tables, and from there I move on to bar back, and from there to bar manager. And I did my part in a Mexican restaurant for about 8 years. From there I moved to a very chefy restaurant in the East Bay of San Francisco. And that's when one day a liquor company came to me. It's like, hey, Manny, you want to compete in this cocktail competition? And I say, I never been in any cocktail competition. So I went there and I got second place. And I got my $500, you know, prize, and my little name on the paper. And I was very happy with that. And from there, liquor companies started coming to me. Manny, you want to compete there? And at one point, when I look around, I was just winning a lot of competitions, and I was not doing too much local. I was doing international. And after winning the Bar and Nightclub Show in Vegas, Bacardi came to me and invited me to represent Tequila Cazadores.
And the rest is history. Yeah. But Mom, you went to college in Guadalajara, right?
I went, yes.
So talk to me a little bit about what your earliest exposure to tequila was at that time when you were there.
Well, it was very interesting because my parents would not let me stay near our Prieta Sonora because I was having a great time because the hippies were coming. So they sent me off to finishing school in Guadalajara, Instituto de Formación Familiar, and I said to my dad, forget this. I'm not going to do this. So I went into the school, mass communications. And there was a girl named Judy Smilgas Sousa. So there was one of the Sousa girls. Her mother was American. Yeah. So I went to the factory and everything.
And that was your earliest sort of introduction to tequila, Mom, right? Yeah. Because in the north, talk to us a little bit about the agave spirits, right? In the north of Mexico, it's more Bacanora, Sotol, obviously, right?
But they're not made with agave.
Is Sotol not made with agave, Manny?
They're made with different type of, they call it cactus.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they're different type of agaves that they use for the production.
I don't know about that. But
what were you told, Mom? What were you told?
No, if you just look it up on Wikipedia, wherever, it's a particular botanical plant. It's not like an agave, but it might be another type of cactus. You're right.
It's not in the lily family, like the blue agave.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And normally they grow in the wild, so you know it's not like the tequila production that you have. All those beautiful fields, and every year, I mean, every 7 years, 6 years, people, they're harvesting. No, people over here to the production of Bacanora and Sotol, they have to go to the desert and get this cactus or this type of or the agave, on the agave family that has been growing there for years, and they get a lot of juice out of that, and they make sotol and bacanora.
So let's talk a little bit about Manny, because everyone assumes that tequila is made all over Mexico, and we apologize for putting this in layman's terms, but you mentioned five states. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the idea where you can technically produce tequila, and they're put into municipalities, right? So we're talking a little bit about Jalisco, which is the king, Guanajuato, Michoacán, Nayarit, and Tamaulipas, right? But Manny, I want you to share with us the difference between why Jalisco is the king and why you have regions like the Valle, and then you have Los Altos. And what is the difference, and why is that important?
So let's start. See, Aaron. So let's start with the country. We had 32 states in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Out of those 32 states, only five, the ones you mentioned, they can produce tequila by law. Mm-hmm. Right? Because agave, blue agave, grows in different parts of the country. But they can, even if they make the liquid, they cannot call it tequila. Mm-hmm. Okay? So everything in the history of the tequila started right there in the state of Jalisco.
Gotcha.
And is there a history of who started it?
Well, I can tell you who were the first ones to start producing and commercializing tequila. So that was La Rojeña, Fabrica La Rojeña, José Cuervo, and after that, Zenobio Sousa start producing. And after that, another little ones, and after that, another big player, Herradura.
Oh, yeah.
But everything started in the town of Tequila.
Uh-huh.
And for many years, they don't even call it tequila. They call it vino de mezcal.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, they start, you know, they were using any agave. Even in Mexico, we don't use the word agave. We use the word maguey o mezcales when you're referring to the plant. And they were using all kinds of different agaves or magueyes or mezcales to make this liquid. Finally, they start just using blue agave tequilana Weber to use tequila, because that was is what mostly grow in that region, in the town of Tequila. So that's why they call it the liquid called tequila, a name of the town where, you know, everything and the history, you know, happened in that town.
So Los Altos, right, where Tequila Cazadores is produced, and then you have the Valle, a lot of people say there's a different flavor profile. Some people say that the tequilas from the Valle are where all the big boys play there, right?
Yeah.
And it's very herbaceous and almost has like, it seems hot when you taste it. It's like a weird flavor profile. When you go to Los Altos, it seems a lot more smoother, a lot more softer and sweeter in flavor. Why do you think that is, man?
So first, let's go to the state of Jalisco. The whole state of Jalisco can produce tequila.
Mm-hmm.
Guanajuato, Tamaulipas, all those, some certain areas. After Jalisco is Michoacán, the one that has more municipalities, they can produce. Now, in the state of Jalisco, as you mentioned, Aaron, we have two main regions producers of tequila. So you have El Valle, the Valley, or Los Altos de Jalisco. Everything in the history started in the Valley, so you have the big boys there. They produce, me, I'm a tequilero, you are a tequilero, we love tequila, we love the history. We never talk bad about no brands, nothing. You know, everybody deserves, you know, their credit for everything. Tequilas in the Valley, they have different flavor profile because the soils are different, the rainfall is different, the weather is different, altitude is different. Tequilas from Los Altos, they're going to give you different flavor profiles. A lot of iron, a little hotter, less water. You know, the agaves, they grow bigger. So one is you're going to get more juice from the agave because you have a bigger agave. The tequilas from Los Altos, they're going to be sweeter, more floral, more citrusy. Tequilas from the Valley, they're going to be more herbal, more earthy. So that's the beauty of tequila. Wherever where the plant, where this magic plant that needs to grow for about 6, 7, 8 years. And after that, when they harvest, the plant die and you have to move to another field. All depends with this plant, where this plant grows, is what is going to reflect on the flavor of the tequila.
I was just going to make a comment about the Altos de Jalisco. When I was in the university there, we used to go there. Y tenían unos ponches. Mm-hmm. Did you ever mm-hmm. have them? They're like the fruit liqueurs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no, they love to make. I mean, Los Altos de Jalisco is famous for a lot of stuff. It's famous for the tequila production. It's famous for all those beautiful
canteritos. In the cantarito.
Because it's famous for dairy. It's a lot of ranches and a lot of pig farms. Uh-huh. So the carnitas, there. I think after Uruapan, Michoacán, the carnitas and arandas, they're beautiful. Another thing makes arandas or Los Altos famous is the women. They're some of the most beautiful women in the.
It's true. And the men too, because they're very tall and very thin. And very light skinned and a lot of green eyes.
It's not the typical Mexican. You know, the people, you know, you and me are on and we look, you know, they're tall, blue eyes, you know, but it's in that region. A lot of Italians, a lot of French, a lot of Germans settled centuries, years ago. And that's why the dairy is so famous, and the dairies and the cows and all that is famous over there, because they moved from Italy and from France. From Germany, yeah. And it's what they used to do, you know.
Or the north of Spain. I mean, everybody in the north of Spain was very light. My mom, you know, was light, very light skin.
Yeah. No, but Manny, you were going to say something earlier when we were talking a little bit about Los Altos versus the Valle. Please, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you have two different flavor profiles, and that's what makes tequila beautiful, right? How, you know, where the agave grows, as it's kind of reflecting to the liquid.
Mm-hmm. What makes something like the Dragones so expensive, let's say?
Yeah, and talk a little bit about some of those little tricks that some people do. You don't have to name brands, but as far as coloring agents and caramels and all the marketing and caca that's around some of the tequila brands, okay? Please, without naming anybody, but just say some of
the stuff. There are two different styles of tequila, right? So you have a tequila, category tequila, and you have a tequila 100%. So it's very important for everybody to know what is the difference when you buy a tequila that you don't have the 100% on the label, right? Mm-hmm. A tequila, people know it as a mixto tequila, but the category is just tequila. That tequila has to be minimum of 51% sugars from blue agave tequilana Weber, and the rest can be sugars from different sources. Tequila 100% or 100% is all the sugars that come from blue agave tequilana Weber. Tequila mixto, that tequila Mexico or Mexico sell the liquid bulk, and they can send it to China, or they can send it to Kentucky, or they can send it anywhere around the world, and they add the rest of the blend to make a cheaper liquid, and it's going to have on the label tequila, and you have a cheesy name right there, right? And they can be bottled anywhere around the world, so the Tequila Regulatory Council, the CRT, doesn't have control of what's going on with that liquid. That's why I always tell people, drink 100% blue agave tequilas. Those tequilas they make, 100% from blue agave tequilana Weber, and those tequilas, they have to be by law bottled at the distillery where they were made, and everything is controlled by the Mexican government. Tequila is one of the most regulated spirits in the world.
Well, you know that the Japan had to go to world court because they brought out a synthetic tequila, and Mexico sued them. And they won.
South Africa, California is trying to make one. I think Australia, they're trying to make one right now. Remember, the blue agave grows not just in Mexico, grows all over the world. the history say the Spanish came to Mexico, and then their travels back and forth from the New Americas or the New Spain to the Europe, to Asia, they were using the agaves that they found in the Americas, and they were using it as a buoys.
Buoys.
So those, they got to land, and they start growing, they start reproducing. That's how agave, you can find agave all over the place.
Wow.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 35 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on an eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail served on the beautiful patio, which has ample room for social distancing. Travelers from around the world find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
So what is your favorite cocktails with tequila?
Oh, no. And let's talk a little bit while we're on the subject, because this is a point of contention, and we take the piss out of each other. And nos echamos mucho carrilla con esto. Pero where's the birthplace of the margarita, which is the most iconic cocktail utilizing tequila, obviously, right? And if you put 5 minutes of attention to Tio Mario, he'll tell you that it was invented at the Cucamonga in Juarez.
Okay, I need to...
All right, so let's stop. Parate.
We have a mutual friend from Argentina, and he, when we're in the middle of a conversation, we say, para.
Which is so rude. It's so rude.
Yeah. So this is the, when we're talking about the margarita, the number one cocktail in the world after the Cuba Libre.
Wow, really? Wow.
Yeah. Cuba Libre, numero uno. Margarita, number two, but it's climbing, and pretty soon it's going to be, you know, right there. Everybody wants to drink margaritas. Everybody talks where it comes from, where it's from, you know. So I think, you know, when I'm talking to Aaron, and Aaron is very proud Mexican, but he's very proud Mexican from El Norte. He's from Juarez, El Paso, and when he gets... close, you know, with Tio Mario, they're not nice to me, you know. Yeah, they always talk really bad, you know. So I don't really want to say what they say, but it's like, so they think everything, the whole world, what happened around Juarez. But guess what, Aaron? I'm from La Capital, bro. Okay. I think the margarita was made in Acapulco. That's
really?
That story that
and tell me
there.
The story behind it. Tell me the story.
Supposedly it was this lady from Texas, Margaret, and she used to vacation in the golden era of Acapulco, where all the Hollywood stars and all the rich people, rich and famous, they used to go. Remember, Acapulco was the first resort, the first international resort in the continent, you know. Second World War, you know, there was not too much travel, so Acapulco became kind of like a world center. And what's not to like? Acapulco is beautiful, the base, the water, everything is very cool, Acapulco. So this lady from Texas traveled to Mexico, to Acapulco, super rich lady. But she was, I mean, tequila was there, but she wanted a cocktail. So this gentleman, bartender in Mexico, made this cocktail and called it Margaret, from her Margarita, the name Margaret, and the Margarita that he made back in that time is totally different from the margaritas that we drink to this day. So it was tequila blanco, Controy, the orange liqueur, the Mexican orange liqueur, a dash of dry vermouth and fresh lime juice, shaky, serve up, and no salt, nothing, up and in a small glass, kind of like a martini, to do three sips, you drink it, and that was it. Well, you know, it's like the style of a martini.
And Mom, talk to us a little bit about, you invested heavily in your restaurant, your namesake restaurant, Zarela's, in 1987. It was a game changer for everybody in the culinary world to understand Mexican food. But you had a frozen margarita machine that became as part of your identity at the restaurant as your food. Now, talk to us a little bit about the idea of the frozen margarita and why that was so part of it.
Well, because I decided that I wanted to do them with fruits. Mm-hmm. You know, so we bought the very expensive fruit purees, the French ones, mm-hmm. you know, with the mango and the passion fruit and all the, we made our own strawberry mix, but they used to call it the margaritas drop your panties, because it was like, people would, the bar was like packed all the time, and you never knew what people were doing on the floor, on the, you know. I mean, it was like crazy. So many people met there, and because of margaritas, they fell, and a lot of them got married because of that.
And they used to have a rule at my mom's restaurant, Manny, where if you had had one, and then you had another one, they had to watch you, because they were very strong and stiff, the frozen margaritas, and it was something that was so special to the bar at Zarela's. You know, you come in there and Manny, with your experience of tending bar as long as you have, what was your first introduction to the frozen margaritas? And did you like do them in a blender? Did you have a machine? What was it? Y breve. Y no vienes con un pinche discurso así muy largo, cabrón. Okay,
let's try to give me some time, because I can extend it, bro. So,
I know. Let's try to condense, cabrón. Okay.
I think the first frozen margarita I tried is when I started working in Garcia's Mexican restaurant from Scottsdale, Arizona. That was my first job in California, and I have to work the well, the service bar, and the bar, and I have four blenders. So frozen margaritas, I hate them forever because I was so busy. We didn't have a machine, so we have to make it at the moment. People love it. I think a frozen margarita deserves a good respect, mm-hmm. because it's always a time and a moment where you can have a nice frozen classic lime or a fruit-flavored margarita by the beach, by the pool. They're beautiful.
You know, we at the restaurant, we were known for our margaritas in general. And, you know, nothing like the pour like this, like that. We had measuring cups on the bar. And they had to make the margaritas according to my recipe.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And it was one part lime juice, one part triple sec, and 1.5 parts silver tequila. Mm-hmm. It'll knock your ass off. I mean, it was just, that was so amazing. Because if a margarita, if you measure it exactly, it doesn't feel like liquor.
Yeah. How old was Aaron when you have that restaurant?
Aaron started working with me at Café Marimba, my first restaurant. So he was around 10, because you were about 10, yeah, because I opened in 1987. And he used to do the cold check. And he used to leave pizza there. And it was like, all the cold check people used to hate it that I gave him one night and Rodrigo the other night, because that way they could make their money, and that was for the whole week. And I could watch him, you know. But he didn't go when he was younger. When he was about 8 or 9, he was in Marimba. He was in the kitchen. You know, he was working the desserts, and he would come out into the floor and say, "Here is the raspberry sorbet, and over here is the chocolate brownie." And this showing with a jacket, you know, because it was all dirty. But he loved it. I mean, he used to even go wash dishes. I mean, I'd love to tell the story, because they asked him. This guy asked him one time. He was an editor-in-chief of the Post or the Village Voice, either one of those. And he asked him, "How much does it pay you?" He said, "Nothing, because of the child labor laws." and the man said, "Well, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm very happy to represent you." He said, "No, thank you. I've already hired Jacoby and Myers."
You're muy trucha. You're muy trucha. Yeah.
Muy picudo.
Muy picudo.
He was adorable.
Yeah. Well, you know, nice. and it's interesting, Manny, because I think it's something to be said. You know, my twin brother Rodrigo, you know, he worked in restaurants and then became a lawyer. And that's his path now, you know? And with all the climate that's happened over the pandemic and how the restaurants and bars haven't gotten the proper funding has been disappointing and frustrating, because the majority of these politicians at some point in their life have worked in a restaurant. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
And their kids have worked at a restaurant. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, airlines are getting bailed out and all that. And I don't want to make it political, but I'm just saying.
Let's go. Who's having more fun, you or your brother?
Well, Rodrigo has a lot of fun. He's a great cook, by the way.
Oh,
todo mundo en nuestra familia son expertos en la cocina. Right, Mom?
Él tiene un lugar en Instagram.
Yeah.
And he has started to get followers because he's one of those people that loves the history of a dish. So he goes and finds all the exact ingredients, otherwise he won't make it.
Yeah.
You know, so anyways, it's very interesting because I said, how should we describe you, as a food scholar? He said, no, as a food enthusiast.
Exactly.
Very cool.
No, pero... he cooks out of recipe books. He loves all these different cuisines, and he's really good. And I'm very proud that all of our family are good cooks. I mean, Manny, sadly for you, you're not a good cook. But, you know, for us, it's just normal.
But, Sarela, you know, I cook sometimes for Aaron, you know, when we're together.
Like,
you know, we're traveling, and I cook something.
What did you make?
Pizza, frozen pizza. No, I do cook. Don't lie, you know.
No, you are a good cook.
But so you know, I have a question for you. Did you cook with tequila?
Yes, I did, actually. I have this pollo borracho recipe from forever, since I was a young, even at the ranch, because there was this couple there that used to make it with sotol, but, you know, but we changed it to tequila. And it was... chicken with almonds, green olives, and then the sauce with a slightly thickened with a tequila. It was fantastic. Mm. Pollo borracho. It's delicious, gorgeous. And we had it on your menu forever. Yeah, you always serve it with a little pickle serrano or something like that.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Aaron? Do you cook with tequila?
No, I mostly marinated with tequila, to be honest. I remember doing early recipes with like salmon and kind of making gravlaks, you know, or smoked salmon with tequila as sort of the marinating flavor. But no, for me, you know, you look at the old traditional queso fundido recipes, you know, they were flambéed, right? Fundido flambéed. And a lot of those old school restaurants in Mexico City would take tequila and flambe the cheese, right, Manny? Do you remember those? Or it was, I mean, my experiences were always with tequila when you kind of cook that. So
yeah,
I'm trying to think of unusual things. You know what? One of the drinks that you don't imagine is going to be good, but it's really good, is the petrolero. You know?
Yeah. Talk to us about the paloma, Manny, because the paloma probably is the second most popular outside of the margarita, no?
Yeah, the paloma, in Mexico, people don't drink margaritas.
No, they don't.
The people, they go and visit our country on the beach resorts, they do. But Mexican people, we don't drink margaritas, we drink derecho, or we drink paloma, or we drink charro negro.
So what is the paloma?
Paloma, beautiful cocktail. The origins of the paloma is from Jalisco. Tequila blanco, ice, pinch of salt, a squeeze of lime, topped with a squirt or any other grapefruit soda.
Yeah.
And that is very important that people, you know, I travel the world and it's like, I go to a bar, it's like, can I have a paloma? Because to me, it's the most tasty cocktail and easy to make, and it's beautiful. And I go to bars and it's like, can you make me a Paloma? And they make me, they're trying to impress me, and they put a bitter, and they put a Campari, or they put some, and it's a cocktail. It's not a Paloma. I say, beautiful drink, brother. Thank you very much. But this is not a Paloma. Paloma, no. You stick, it's so easy, three ingredients, not counting the ice.
You know what I love? The vampiros.
Vampiro, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Vampiro,
yeah,
is a
you take the sangrita, which is a chaser that you often serve with tequila.
All right, let's talk about what I mean, for everybody, we have to explain everything, okay? So what's in a vampiro, what's in a, and the chaser and the sangrita, please, for everybody.
Okay, you describe the sangrita.
Sangrita, when you go to Mexico, you order a tequila, and they always serve you a tequila, derecho, that means straight, and they give you a sangrita. And it's a little chaser. It's based with, the base is tomato juice, some citrus juices, some type of sweet, and spices. Everybody has a different recipe of sangrita. There's beautiful, it's nice, tangy, citrusy, it's spicy. And people ask me all the time, which one is first, the tequila or the sangrita? And it's like, I think you decide which one is the best, but it's like a beautiful combination. That's very Mexico. Very, you know, when you go anywhere, I mean, I don't work in Mexico multiple times. Mm-hmm. We order a tequila and sangrita. You don't need us. Sangrita is right there, and we love it.
Yeah. So the vampiro you make by mixing sangrita with
tequila, tequila, lime, sangrita, and top with grapefruit soda.
Wow.
No,
so
no. El vampiro no lleva grapefruit soda. Sorry.
Yeah. No. ¿Qué lleva?
No, nomás lleva eso.
No, lleva grapefruit soda. Otherwise, it's a Bloody Maria, spicy Bloody Maria.
No, I have the book that I finally got. The Marichu en la cocina de México. Ahí tiene la receta, pero es en de.
No se la sabe. Yo soy mixólogo toda la vida, doña. Yo me las he hecho todo.
Pero yo tengo muchos más años que tú y yo he tomado muchos más vampiros que tú y yo nunca.
El vampiro es diluted with grapefruit soda.
Sí.
Otherwise, it's too thick.
No, mami, pero hay que debatirlo, mami. You know, we can have a debate about it, pero está bien, mami.
Sarela, $10, okay? Next show.
Okay, $10.
Okay, ándale. Ahí lo vemos, mami. Okay? Ya sabes. No, pues así es, ¿no?
Another cool cocktail with tequila.
Let's talk about the bandera, right? So the bandera is an interesting one because we're on the topic of sangrita and tequila. So let's explain a little bit of what the bandera is, right? So it's lime. So go ahead.
Mexicans, we love to be Mexicans. We're very, very proud to be Mexicans. So we have a cocktail that serves in three different shots or caballos. Represents the Mexican flag, right? Or Mexican, the colors of the Mexican flag. So we have the blanco, the el verde, y el rojo.
¿Y el verde qué es?
El verde es el limón.
Limón
and sangrita and the tequila blanco.
Yeah. And that's like the beautiful bandera. And you'll get it there presented to you. And
you just see.
And you can kind of play with it, in the different styles, so. Yeah,
I wanted to tell you before we go, the name of the plant that for the sotol is probably related to the asparagus, because this is asparagus.
But is that the primary ingredient or no?
Yeah, it's a type of.
It has no agave though. I don't believe that.
I think the blue agave is part of the asparagus family too.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, so just Google it.
That's why I thought it was very interesting.
Look, this is what's exciting about this. We're having a very healthy debate amongst three proud Mexicans, and you know how that goes, okay? But
from different races of the country.
Exactly. And look, we have some different opinions on things, and that's a healthy conversation that we're having right now. If somebody might opinion different from what Manny says versus my mom or myself, please, we open it up, send some comments, And all we want to do is be authentic and be true to what we're talking about in the subject matter. So please, you know, and that's what we're trying to get accomplished here. The world of tequila is something that is so important to the identity of Mexican culture. And I think I'm so happy that we had you here, Manny, because you're somebody so important to me. Aparte, no eres mi hermano, eres mi compa. Eres mi compadre. And anybody that's Mexican that's listening to this knows the difference between an amigo versus a compadre. Cuando eres mi compadre, it's very different, you know? And you're my compadre, and I'm really happy that you came here. Mom, he was great, right, Mom? He's very knowledgeable, you know? We had a little bit of some tension versus the Vampiro and Sotol, but we can get past it. We can get past that. We'll be fine.
No, I just want to tell you, Zairela, I want to see those $10 shipped on the mail or Venmo or Zelle or whatever.
I'm going to show you.
The soonest we finish the show, start sending my 10 bucks because I'm very top of the money, okay?
No, because I have all these Mexican cookbooks with drinks on them.
Okay. But you don't have mine. Now, you have the cookbooks, but you don't have the mixology books that I have.
Yeah. So let's have a healthy debate. And I think what would be fun is to do an Instagram live of all three of us to settle this, and I think that would be really fun. Okay, it doesn't have to be a whole.
I can do the shaking.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Mom, if there's one thing that Parkinson is good for, is the shaking. Brilliant, Mom. Yeah,
I don't. You want to talk about this?
Yes. All right. So before we go, let's talk about the most beautiful tequila that I know. It's called Tequila Cazadores Blanco. I'm very happy to be partnered with them. We have a relationship for over 5 years. This year, we're going to be doing some beautiful things together for Tequila Cazadores. 100% Blue Agave from Los Altos. They're coming up on their 100-year anniversary, right, Manny? Which is going to be beautiful.
100 years next year. And we're ready. We're preparing for the celebration. Yeah. You will be part of that, Aaron.
Absolutely.
And we'll be traveling to Mexico to celebrate there and all over the world, you know, we're part of the history of tequila, mm-hmm. and we're very proud for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, brindis.
Manny doesn't know my toast.
Okay, dale.
We came upon a graduation ceremony in a little village in Monsepatepetu, and they invited us to the celebration that followed. And one of the parents stood up and said, "Hago este ofrecimiento. Porque solo no se puede compartir la vida. Otros tienen que estar ahí." So he said, I make this offering because alone one cannot share life. Others must be there. So thank you for being here with us. It was a pleasure to get to know you a little bit more. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the invite, Zairela. It's always a pleasure always talking to you. Good to see you. You stay beautiful the way you are. Aaron, I cannot say the same thing to you. But I love you, brother.
Yeah. Hey, hablamos todos los días, entonces ahí estamos.
Yeah.
Okay?
Cool.
Okay, abrazos.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.